Nikki is a mummy to two children, wife to husband Matt. Nikki was diagnosed initially with type 2 diabetes before type 1 diabetes, and we'll be talking about that, I'm sure, over the evening. Nikki is a big advocate for diabetes, a freelance writer and speaker, has worked in many projects with medtech companies. Nikki has been on her own roller coaster journey with diabetes and has gone from using syringes to multi daily injections to insulin bumps and from finger pricking to now using CGM. So I'm sure we'll be talking about her journey of technology and how it's changed over the years. Looking forward to chatting to her. I'm going to talk a little bit about her diabetes journey, about her journey with being pregnant, and also about parenting as well. So welcome along, Nikki.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I'm great. It's nice to see you here. Appreciate your time coming on today and spending it with us, and I'm really looking forward to our chat tonight.
Oh, no, thank you so much for having me along, and thank you to Tabitha and Felix for going to bed on time.
Oh, you've nailed that. They're in bed. Is that Matt working tonight?
He is, yeah, so it's a solo parenting night
No
tonight.
worries. So guys, we're gonna get into our chat tonight with Nikki. Nikki, we're gonna do a little quick fire fun round of questions if you're up for it. What is your name?
Nikki.
What is your occupation?
Freelancer.
When were you diagnosed with diabetes and what age?
2001, I was just 20.
Your favorite hypo treatment?
Mini bags of Haribo
Oh,
slash
yes.
candy kittens, but it's so dangerous that I actually bollocks for them now. So
What are candy kittens?
they're a sweet, they're like a jelly sweet. They're just so yummy.
Oh my God, you're gonna have to send me a picture. They sound delicious. They're
I've
like
ordered a
the
mystery box for 20 quid and you get about 60 bags of whatever is close to out of date in the box. And I swear it lasts me about 2 seconds.
Wow. I love the sour patches. Are they anything like that?
Little bit, yes.
A little bit like that, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I've got in my head. Do you have any type 1 complications? Yes or no?
No.
Do you use insulin pump or pens?
Insulin pump.
Do you finger prick or use CGM?
Mainly CGM, but I do still finger prick occasionally.
Oh, and we can have a chat about that in a short while, I'm sure. What CGM do you use?
Dexcom.
What pump do you use?
Omnipod.
What's worse, feeling hypo or hyper?
Oh, crikey, that's a really good question. I'm gonna say hypo.
Are you hypo aware?
It's borderline.
What three symptoms of hypos do you have? If you
Grumpiness.
have any.
Grumpiness, slurred speech, and not really being able to connect my thoughts to what I'm saying.
Absolutely. When you finger pricked, or like you say, you do a little bit of finger pricking now. So when you finger pricked, did you change the lancets every day?
No.
One thing you like about your diabetes.
My husband.
Oh, and we'll be
We'll be
talking about
talking
Matt
about
later.
him.
Yeah. One thing you don't like about your diabetes.
My diabetes.
Yeah, diabetes full stop or diabetes loads of exclamation marks. Absolutely. Do you love or hate the smell of insulin?
Do you know, I can honestly say my sense of smell's not great, so I don't smell it very often. I guess I'm a bit I don't have any feelings towards the smell of insulin.
That's fine, that's cool. And if you're on a desert island, what three things would you take? You may want to include diabetes things, but you don't have to.
What three things would I take? Matt, Tabs, and Felix.
Oh, love it. And you leave the
Yeah.
diabetes at home.
Yeah.
Super. Oh, that was nice. Love that. Thank you, Nikki.
No worries.
So, this evening, we're going to touch upon a little bit about your type 1 background, going to talk about your career background, and then talk about pregnancy and parenting, and then finish off with a bit of diabetes advocacy, peer support, and a bit about your blog.
Okay. I have
Brilliant.
a
So
quick
let's.
question for you, Nikki, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how up to date your profile picture is. I was going to ask sort of how old your kids were and if they can tell that you're low sugar, maybe before you can, because you said your hyper awareness was a bit borderline.
Yeah, it is. So I think as a result of my pregnancies, my hyper awareness is a little bit skew with at the well, yeah, still. but Tabitha turns 4 in May and Felix is 2 on Friday. I don't know that they don't perceive that I'm hypo, so they don't say that I'm hypo before I realize I'm hypo, but when I tell them I'm hypo, Tabitha in particular is very good at sort of taking care of Felix and distracting him whilst I shovel Haribo into my face.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with shoving Haribo in your face. I fully support that. No, I was just curious because I've got my little sister is ooh, four now,
Yeah.
and she can't like tell. She can tell I'm hypo, but she doesn't necessarily like register it as hypo. She just knows something's wrong, and she'll ask me if I need to get something to eat,
Oh.
kind of thing. So she's picked up on that. How she's picked up, I don't know, but I was just curious in general
That's
if
it.
anything like that.
So my dog Ruby, bless her, my very missed dog Ruby, she used to know when I was hyper and she would literally just come and sit on me.
That's cool. I've heard of them training, actually training
Yeah.
dogs for diabetes.
She just somehow knew and she'd just come and sit on me and I'd be like she'd be my shadow. I'd be like, why won't you leave me alone? Ah, okay, yeah, hypo.
Oh, that's very cool.
It's amazing what the people around us kind of, whether they actually register it as us being hypo or not, but how they get used to our diabetes quirks and things, I guess, and help us, isn't it? It's brilliant.
I
Your
was talking
little
to Tom
sister
a couple of
sounds
sessions ago
awesome.
about my best friend that he can pick up, like when we go to a bar, not even to just drink, just to get a meal, he can tell I'm low sugar before I can or my sensor can. And
Wow.
I don't know how he does it, he just does it.
That's amazing. Oh, keep hold of those people.
Awesome. Back to you, Tom.
Cheers, mate. Loving it. Great chat to start off. So, Nikki, let's talk about your type 1 background, right? So, a couple of weeks ago, me and Nikki had an amazing evening on Zoom and we caught up and we started prepping for tonight's chat. And it was just so fascinating to learn some more. So, Nikki, you have two diabetes, right?
I do.
Tell us about that. Come on.
Well, initially, I was diagnosed with just a touch of diabetes. And then about 5 months later, I was told I probably had type 1 diabetes. And so I'm kind of waiting for the, do I get a third diabetes when someone says you've definitely got type 1 diabetes? Or is that grieving? but yeah, initially I was misdiagnosed. The GP I saw, and this was just in a small village practice, with just three GPs, so it literally was very small, and they'd known me since I was like running around in a nappy. And yeah, she dipped my urine and says, looks like you have a touch of diabetes. Asked me to go and sit in the waiting room while she phoned the hospital for advice. And when I was called back in, I was told, so likely because of your age and your weight, it's probably type 2. So here's an A4 sheet of paper about changing your diet and lifestyle, and we'll put you on these metformin tablets. I mean, by that point, it had taken me a good month probably to actually realise I needed to see a GP. So I was probably quite heavily into DKA at that point already. I mean, I think at one point, I didn't get off the toilet for a day, you know, just peeing like nobody's business, and I barely drank anything.
So what signs and symptoms were you showing then in that period of time?
So, I was definitely tired, definitely thirsty. I have thrush. And I think I probably bought over-the-counter thrush about 3 times in the space of about 2-3 weeks, maybe. It just would not clear up. I didn't feel in my body. I just didn't feel present at all. I don't think I noticed that I was losing weight, but other people would tell me that they thought I'd lost weight. But I've got quite a complicated relationship there with body image and weight loss and things. So I kind of shrugged that off as people just trying to be nice, because obviously how would I lose weight? I've not done anything to lose weight.
That's how you feel, isn't it? I recall myself as pretty much like that. I think hit puberty, put on the weight, and then I lost a bit of weight, and then obviously lost during the symptoms period. And yeah, I definitely had that.
It's exactly the same as well.
Yeah, it's horrible, isn't it?
It is. It is. So obviously, the doctor said to you, right? Here's a sheet of A4 information. Here's your metformin. Off you go.
Yeah.
How was life then? With pretty much type 2 diabetes. They were pretty much saying that. And how did you adapt with that? How did that impact your life?
It's full of omelets and iceberg lettuce. Because the advice seems to be to avoid carbs or reduce them. I don't know, it just didn't... Nothing felt improved. You know, you have a diagnosis of something and you get started on medication and you expect it to take a little while, but you expect to feel a bit better. And then after a little while longer, you expect to feel even better. And then you expect to kind of feel a bit normal, but it didn't happen for me. I just felt, I felt further and further away from the person I was. I felt so disconnected from my body and from everything. I was definitely depressed. I lost my job because I wasn't well enough to go in. I know that now. But to everyone else, they just perceived it as me not being bothered to go in. But I physically couldn't get myself up in the morning. It didn't matter. I'd have my mum knocking on the door or coming in to my flat and getting me out of bed. There's no way I'd have been able to stand up to dress myself. I was that exhausted. And I was losing weight. I lost about 5 stone in about 4 months. And everyone was saying how fantastic I looked and, oh, you must have got the diabetes diagnosis for a reason, because obviously, you know, the omelets and iceberg lettuce are working for you. And it just felt horrendous. And life wasn't good. I didn't want to go back to the GP and say, I don't feel right, because I didn't feel at that point in my life, and I don't think I'm alone in feeling this, but I didn't feel that I could go back and say, I don't think you're right. Something is not right here, and I need you to check me again, because they're the experts. They've spent years and years training and continue to train and read, and I have had and do have still such absolute respect for the work that healthcare professionals put in to being healthcare professionals that I didn't dare dream of questioning it, because I didn't want to seem disrespectful. But I realise now that, you know, that wasn't just the GP's error. That was, you know, the hospital perhaps should have said that I needed to go in. And actually, the awareness around the fact that anyone of any age can be diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which is so much better now than it was 21 years ago, but it's still not where it needs to be. You know, I mean, we see people correcting publications and, you know, celebrities and people in the public eye frequently, you know, no, sorry, you don't just get type 1 diabetes as a child, you know, and I think that all contributed to, you know, what was a mistake that I think sometimes, I still feel quite bitter about, actually.
What do you think needs to be done to improve that duty care in reducing sort of misdiagnosis of that?
It goes without saying that awareness is a big thing, I think, and it's for everyone, across the board. It doesn't just mean primary care, but secondary care and everyone
knows. Yep.
You know, it needs to be very, very clear that, you know, anyone, any age, it's not just the children's illness or disease or condition or whatever term you identify with. And I think training is a really big thing. But also it's empowering patients and people to understand that when you have a long-term condition, you can work with your team, you work with them, you know, you're not working for them, you're not sitting in front of your consultant to get his approval or her approval on how you've been managing your diabetes. You're sitting in front of them to, as the expert in the room in your diabetes, to tell them what you're struggling with, what you're finding is working really well, and to marry that up with their experience and expertise and you know, come out with a collaborative effort. I really do think that, you know, I'm fortunate that that's how my team operate. I'm constantly getting told off for not giving myself enough credit, and equally they refuse to accept credit for the part they play, and more people deserve to experience that. And I do think that's a really big thing, is appreciating it's a team effort, it's not just one person doing all the work, and I yeah. think slowly that will filter down and make a difference throughout the system, if that makes sense.
Nikki, you were talking a minute ago about misdiagnosis. I actually think that's part of the reason most ambulances, at least East Midlands ones over here, have blood sugar testing kits, and they do it automatically, like whether you're drunk or, you know, just unconscious or, you know, perfectly fine and sat in the chair. They always seem to see blood sugar first now.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing, because I had to fight a bit for my first sort of I actually requested another doctor who basically got me diagnosed straight away. But the previous one, they were basically kind of saying, are you losing weight? You know, it's a mental thing or whatever.
Wow.
You know, you must be doing something. So I had to fight. And as soon as I got a new doctor, the first thing he did was a blood sugar test after he saw what looked like a boil on my leg, which is my abscess on my leg. Which is basically due to built up sugar. But he got diagnosed straight away. In fact, I got rushed to A&E within, I think, half an hour once I got my new doctor. But I had to fight for it. Thanks. So basically saying, oh, you're losing weight. It's just a mental thing, blah, 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 blah.
Wow. And did you have, like, an awareness of diabetes? Do you have any kind of...
No, I was diagnosed in year 7. I don't know what that is exactly in age, but I'm 29 now.
Okay, so that's incredible. That,
yeah, I know there's a bit of less of a stigma now. I mean, it's still there, but there's a little bit less of a. There's more awareness of diabetes, I think, nowadays.
Yeah, and I think I think that's incredible that you had that ability at. You know, such a young age, actually, when you've got enough going on in your body and your mind as it is, to actually say no, something's not right, I need another doctor. That's incredible. But also,
it was actually my mum that campaigned for that for me.
Oh, nice one, mum. But that other doctor did an amazing job there. I think there is a lot less stigma, and I think actually, that's also probably what contributed to my misdiagnosis was the stigma of, she's overweight and she's 20. So it's not just an age thing, but it was my weight as well. So thinking it was a lifestyle situation. And I can remember them saying something like, you've got no genetic link with type 1 in your family, so it must be type 2.
Can you remember what your sugar was when you were diagnosed?
No one did a finger prick.
No way. No, I was HI. I was off the scale, literally.
Yeah, I suspect that's probably where I was. They just did a dip test for me and my ketones were like really, really present. And I've requested my medical records from when I was in the September after when I got the probably type 1 diagnosis. I've requested them because I would like to know what my blood glucose was at that point, because it would have been probably high as well. I can't imagine that it was anything but.
Wow.
Yeah, it's horrific, isn't it? It's sort of reliving the sort of diagnosis experience, but then. Sometimes when I think about it, I also think, oh, yeah, but you survived that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It must have been hard, though, over that time. Like you say, you've been told about type 2 and you've been told to do this, eat this or do that and have the medication, but then it wasn't working. Must have been really stressful.
It was, do you know what, I reached desperation, I think. You know, I had people saying to me, oh, you look fantastic. And I was buying clothes in shops that I haven't been able to buy clothes in. And, so I'm being told I look fantastic. I'm buying fantastic clothes that, you know, but I feel like death. I can remember the thirst got so great at one point. I downed a 1 litre bottle of vodka because I was bored of water. I just wanted to taste something different. And it didn't hit sides. It didn't touch me at all. It didn't affect me or impact me at all. Because it was literally just going straight through me. My body wasn't taking anything from anything that was going into my body because I was so deep into DKA.
Wow.
I just eventually it got to the point where I was so desperate. I wanted help, but I didn't feel able to ask for it. I took an overdose of my metformin. I didn't, and I then drove over to my mum's and asked her to take me to A&E, because, you know, I just wanted the help, but I didn't want to be a burden, in terms of resources. I didn't want to call an ambulance or anything like that. I just wanted I wanted someone to see how desperate I was, how disassociated with my body I was, and how my body was actually, it was deteriorating. It wasn't glowing. It wasn't looking fantastic. It wasn't in shape. And anyway, round is a shape. I don't care what you say. And I just, yeah, I felt really desperate. And I spent a week in hospital where they told me I probably had type 1, that they'd put me on insulin and I'd start to feel better. And a nurse there said to me, don't forget that your diabetes lives with you. You don't live with it. And that stuck with me. But I still didn't understand the magnitude of the diagnosis. No one explained to me that this drug they were handing me was, you know, if you don't get it right, then, yeah, you're going to hypo like crazy and it's going to be really horrible. Or you're going to hypo and things. So it was, yeah, it was all very reactive, I guess, is the way, the best way to describe it. Yeah, very reactive.
In terms of,
you know, where we got to it. And I did start to feel better. I was put on to human Mixtard, which is a sort of you had to shake up the vial, and it was kind of a mixture of long acting and medium acting, but it meant I had to eat at set times. So that's where that whole thing of, oh, so you've got diabetes, so you have to eat at mm-hmm. particular times comes from. You know, if you ever see an occupational health person, quite a few of those, even going back sort of a decade, would still be like, so reasonable adjustments we need to make to you is regular breaks for you to eat. And of course, that hasn't been a necessity for a long time because of the basal bolus and insulin pumps and everything.
I actually lost my job because of that. When I was first diagnosed, I had like a part-time, you know, paper round kind of thing. And right. I was told I needed regular breaks to eat because I was also on a mixed insulin back then. And I actually lost my job at the time. I mean, it was only cash in hand, you know, paper round kind of thing, but.
It still has an impact, doesn't it? It just chips away at your confidence. And it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, just a job or your career. It's someone sort of saying, well, because you're ill, we're not willing to invest in you.
Yeah.
And that sucks, doesn't it? I've, and we'll probably talk about it a bit more later on, but I've unfortunately lost a number of jobs because of my diabetes. And it's really hard. It's not fair. Not fair.
And also, you mentioned about starting your journey with put onto insulin with the syringe, and that was the good old 12.5 needles, wasn't it?
Oh yes. oh yeah. Oh blimey, did I feel that?
I bet.
My injection sites are hurting thinking about that.
Oh sorry. Oh, you know it's yeah, they were painful, and like even when they were teaching me how to do it, they were like, you don't need to push it all the way in because you just want it to be a subcutaneous injection. And I'm like, well, it's hard not to push it all the way in. That's you know, that makes me think about it more.
It does.
And if I think about it more, it hurts more. But also, inject it like drawing up a syringe when you're out and about or when you're amongst other people and you take the cap off of this 12.7 millimeter needle, they stop talking to you and you suddenly become very aware that everyone in the room is watching you inject.
I get very self-conscious about my like 3 Another meat and needles. Imagine working out at 12.5 while I'm at Father's Day having Frankie and Benny's. Wow.
Oh, yeah, no,
I
it
was going to ask you,
was.
Nikki, actually, what did you use pens before, after syringes, did you use pens before you had your pump?
I did, yeah. So,
Were you ever self-conscious in public for that kind of thing?
when I had my pens, I was less self-conscious because it was just a case of dialing it up and doing it. And I literally, even with the syringes, I was on autopilot. It was other people's reactions that made me self-conscious. But the pens, I think I was more able to, yeah, to just do it. And so I didn't draw attention to it. Whereas when you're drawing it up from a vial and you're having to kind of flick it to get the air bubbles
It
out
kind of looks a
quickly,
bit dodgy, doesn't it?
it does. It looks really dodgy.
I made a conductor on a tram scream like very loud when I was doing my medication on tram. This was like shortly after I was diagnosed. I never did syringes. I've always had pens, luckily.
Yeah.
But I made a conductor on a tram scream and drop a little thing that prints tickets. It was the funniest thing ever, and pretty much since then I haven't cared because, like, if you want to go and scream, I will watch and enjoy.
That is brilliant. I mean, I've had people like staring at, like people with needle phobia, and I'm always respectful.
Yeah,
You
yeah.
know, I always have a look around me, and like if someone's looking, I try and just be as discreet as I possibly can. I don't sit there and get a neon sign out and say I'm about to inject with a needle. But I found one person who had a needle phobia, and I knew they had a needle phobia, so I was really mindful of that. I've never seen a grown man react the way they did. It was like a boa constrictor was heading straight for him, and I was 12 feet away from him, and he. There was no way, and this was like an 8 millimeter needle by that point, so you know, on a pen, so it wasn't even the old syringe. But yeah, it was
There were
people's
only me and
reaction.
about four other people on this tram, but I didn't expect a conductor to walk down the middle of the tram checking everyone's tickets randomly. So I looked around, you know, we're all spread out. Like, literally, it's pretty much one person in each carriage at this point, and there was a couple of carriages. And I didn't expect a conductor to walk down the middle of it checking everyone's tickets randomly because they checked them when they got on.
That's crazy. How what happened? Did you just kind of, that's it, he screamed and
I kept doing my medication because I wasn't stopping
yeah.
doing that because I needed insulin. So, you know, if you want to scream about it, go ahead. I don't care. They
That's
did get a
it.
call through the emergency like comm system though from the driver asking what the problem was, and she had to stand there and basically sulk into the comms because she didn't realize what it was until she saw that it was an insulin pen because it was, you know, clearly obviously it had like insulin in it and it was printed on it and
Yeah.
it said insulin. So she kind of got a bit embarrassed, and I didn't know. So,
Man, that's so funny.
Nikki, a little bit about going on to becoming type one, and thank you for sharing that incredible story about the overdose. And I'm so thankful that you reached out and went to your mum, and you got that support, and then for you to get that support you needed, really. I think it really touched that, and it's really powerful. And thank you for having the bravery to do that. And then talking about your sort of early stages, going on to the syringe, and then the insulin pens. I know you said you were on Lantus and Lavamere, and then
Yeah.
you went on to the pump. And one of the interesting stories I had on Zoom with you, and I'd like you to share, is about the wedding story dress. Go for it.
Yeah, so my insulin pump, originally my first one was the Medtronic Breathe Block, which is how it felt to me. I know there are fans of it out there, but it wasn't for me. I felt tethered. And when it was time to go wedding dress shopping, It wasn't until I said to myself, right, I'm just, when I go into the shop, I'm disconnecting the pump and I'm choosing my wedding dress without thinking about where I'm going to need to put my insulin pump. That's the only way I'm going to get through this, because I was already nervous enough as it was. I just had a baby and I wasn't feeling particularly bridal. And so I went in and I chose my dress. And then I was like, where's the pump going to go? I can't access this pump to put temporary basals on, or, I could bolus from the Contour Next BG meter. But, I couldn't use the bolus wizard. So it was like, oh, this is going to be such hard work. And I spoke to my team to try and, think up some solutions. There was no way that getting a seamstress to, sew a pouch anywhere into my dress. Because my dress was quite, I want to say fitted, but it wasn't a fitted dress. It's like the smallest A-line dress that you could have got, and there was no way it was going to work, and there was no room to tuck it into my bra, which was the go-to before breastfeeding. And so I saw that Kaleido were coming to the UK, and I can be a bit cheeky sometimes. One of my secondary school teachers just in my leaving book just put shichpa, or I can't pronounce it, but he was like, you're cheeky, you're determined, and you'll try things, you're tenacious, you'll put yourself out there and give it a go, and if it fails then you do it spectacularly. And so I contacted Kaleido and asked them if I would be able to try their pump. I said, I'm quite happy in exchange for trying your pump to write about the difference it makes to my wedding, to me experiencing that day. Because I kind of think, or I felt at the time, that there wasn't a lot out there moments like that, it's not an everyday kind of life experience, but it's not, it's a really big thing, and it should be sort of talked about a bit more, and any resources I saw, people were using hidden pouches and things, or sewing it in, and they were able to manage their diabetes in a very different way. And it didn't feel like the way I wanted to manage my diabetes on my wedding day was kind of represented. I sort of wanted it to be as easy as possible. And so I was able to trial a Kaleido pump and loved it. Loved working with Kaleido on the blogs and talking about the experience, and had some really nice communications from people kind of all over the place, really. From reading my blog and the difference it made. But
are they still in operation?
So unfortunately the pump was withdrawn because there was a safety issue. They are still in operation, and I think they are on their way back. I certainly hope they're on their way back, because they are a lovely lovely company, and the product itself, it's a nice compact pump. It's fun. It doesn't have a lot of waste because it's rechargeable, and it's ever so colourful.
Are they Chris? Are they over in the States?
No, they're Dutch.
Oh, okay. So, are they available in different countries?
So I can't remember exactly where they were available. I mean, primarily, I think they were just in the Netherlands and the UK
Yeah.
and some other areas of Europe as well, I believe. But
So
yeah.
now then you're on the Omnipod now, aren't you? And you use Dexcom.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, I
how is that?
love it as well. I mean, I think the sense of freedom that I felt when I connected to the Kaleido is the same sense of freedom I feel with the Omnipod.
Yeah.
I just it yeah, I mean, as with any med tech, there are days when it irritates me because maybe it's I've picked a bad site or it's leaking or I have all the usual frustrations with it, but overall I'm really pleased with it. I'm really pleased with the functionality of it and yeah, and the freedom. And my kids love it. I did a pod change this morning and Felix is picking up my PDM going, pod, pod. And I'm like, yeah,
Love
that's Mama's pod. He's like, pod phone. And then
Oh,
he's
that's
buzzing
brilliant.
around with it like it's a mobile. But they know what
Ace.
it is. They know
Yes.
not to yank it and things. And they seem to have an affection for it. I quite often find after just stroking it, which is really cute.
Is.
And I think she's starting to understand what a difference that pod makes to her mama's life. And
Yeah,
yeah.
definitely. Before we head over to Chris, talk about your career background. Finally, what about the impact technology has had on you, in your journey? You've gone from having that syringe to 12.5 to insulin pens, and now having pumps and technology. How has it impacted on you and your sort of thoughts on the future with obviously the Omnipod? Talks of closed looping and things like that. What's your overall thoughts?
I mean, so in terms of the differences, it's sort of, I suppose, seeing progression of it. Just in has been really impressive, and the choice now that exists, I think, is incredible. There are so many more, more pump CGM pen, manufacturers and things out there, and just yeah, seeing that choice is incredible, and I hope that it is, all of that choice is something that everyone can access and have that access to. For me, I mean, I've kind of resisted the idea of looping for a very long time because I micromanage my diabetes. And I always kind of have since I've kind of got on board with it, if you like. So the thought of handing it over to technology, which, as I've just said, isn't perfect. There are days when the Dexcom's way off and the pod is leaking, and I'm just like, I'm done with technology now. I'm going old school. But I'm more and more intrigued by it, and certainly have started looking into looping with the Omnipod. Because I think for me, the ability to, or for there to be that connectivity without needing a tubed pump, that makes it more appealing to me. I don't think I would have gone or would go on to a tubed pump just for the sake of looping because my quality of life is so much better. So yeah, I'm really excited. And obviously, with the career side of things, I am privileged that I get to see some of the things that are coming up and hear about some of the things that are coming up.
And I think that leads us perfectly, Nikki,
yeah,
to Chris, who's going to head up the next section. So thank you so much. That was such an amazing 45 minutes of sharing your background of your journey with diabetes, type 1 and type 2, and everything in between. So thank you so much. Brilliant.
Great.
Stuff.
You
are very welcome, my love. Chris, over to you, mate.
Hello, Nikki.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well across the pond. How are things for you?
Yeah, all good here. This is nice. Nice to be amongst you and chatting with you all. watching a sunset from the windows.
So the section I have, the questions I have are sort of about your career in working with diabetes as in a number of roles as a consultant and a freelance writer. Can you just sort of give us the overall sort of background, how you got started in the field and what the sort of career arc has been?
Yeah, so I touched on earlier that I was unfortunate to lose some jobs because of my diabetes, and that would be because the appointments were an inconvenience or because I didn't recover from sickness at the same rate as, you know, my colleagues who were in perfect health. I took a bit of a time out and wanted to focus on my diabetes. I think I'd been diagnosed for about 15 years, and I started writing a blog inspired by a very, very dear friend of mine who's no longer with us. She did some amazing awareness raising and fundraising for brain tumor research after being diagnosed with TREV, as she called him. In a conversation realized, oh, hang on, I've got my own kind of health thing that maybe I should be contributing to raising awareness, because perhaps that might help other people not have the same experience that I've had, because I found it really hard. And at the same time, I kind of asserted myself to my now hospital team and so kind of just get a bit more on track with my diabetes. But through doing that and the hospital team, it kind of opened up some volunteer opportunities. So I volunteered at some World Diabetes Day events held at at Ockham, which is the clinic that I attend in Oxford, and got speaking to some people from Diabetes UK and connecting with other people in the diabetes world, but not necessarily people with diabetes. And it kind of went from there. I'd be asked to speak at training days. So I've done a number of speaking for patient research ambassadors. I've taken part in a lot of research studies, but also trying, steering groups, so designing research and trying to recruit people, to take part in research, you know, a bit more, and it's just led to making connections with people that has then led to, oh, would you write a piece for this, or would you come and speak about this experience? There's a research study coming up, would you participate in it? And then in terms of the sort of consultancy role, that's a lot more recent than I've, it's from those connections through research and speaking at events that I've made those, yeah, contact with people just in conversation, and I've been asked to sort of consult on a number of projects, which has been really interesting, and I feel really fortunate to do that, because I'm very passionate about having an impact, you know, using my experiences and to try and amplify other people's experiences. And yeah, it's really varied and interesting, and I love it. But I've had a lot of guilt around it because, you know, it's not always been, I don't know, sometimes I've just felt that working with medtech, it's not looked at very fondly. So I've wrestled with that a little bit. But now I'm this is my job, this is what I do, and I'm not quite so shy about it anymore, I guess.
That's actually kind of interesting. I see a lot in the community, there seems to be a lot of patients have a distrust of people that are sort of working directly with industry.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and I don't know, it's just really hard because I think there's been a long history of industry to a degree kind of abusing our experiences as people with diabetes by sort of, you know, having those experiences and not, you know, there being no remuneration for them, I suppose. But then it sort of then sits awkwardly because when there is a remuneration for projects and things that you do, how do you communicate that? It's a very, very weird place to be. I've recently done some ads for Glucomen and was very upfront about that. And I always am, but then when you do consultancy projects that, you know, you're not talking about because it's not in the public domain, do you say something about that? Or, you know, it's really hard. It doesn't change my view of things. I'm not paid to have a certain opinion. I don't try and influence people to use a certain product or anything like that, to try and make a difference. And get to a, you know, I've got some long-term goals and some work that I'm sort of projects that I'm chipping away at in the background. I hope will make a really big difference one day, and it's everything sort of turns into a means to an end. But I think when you're seen to be doing something for one company or a certain organization, charity or wherever, people don't, they just see that in the moment. They don't think about the bigger picture behind that and the impact that you could be having on how that company operates or how that company develops a product or how they communicate with us as people with diabetes. And it's a shame. It is a shame that, you know, people sort of feel like they have to be really kind of guarded about the work they do. Because we are experts in our own diabetes. We're experts in diabetes, and if we choose to make it our full-time job, then that's okay, isn't it?
Well, it's already a full-time job.
Exactly, if we choose to make it our secondary full-time job.
Plus, I think there's an aspect there of, not everybody is going to be building their own looping system or whatever with a pump and a CGM. Most people just don't have the technical capacity or access to the tools that they need or other things. Innovations that come out of that space can't reach the larger community unless it's done by a commercial entity and actually released as a commercial product. And that's something I think a lot of people miss.
Yeah, exactly. It's Yeah, you're absolutely spot on there. It really, a lot of there is so much that gets missed, and it's hard to translate to sort of the wider community, because everyone has their own sort of feelings and beliefs and understandings, and which of course they're all very much entitled to. But yeah, it needs that process. It needs to sort of build, yeah, as you say, become a whole commercial entity to meet the needs of us.
Obviously, you can't necessarily talk about a lot of things. I understand there are things that I have helped out with that I can't talk about. But are there any projects or services that you're working on that you want to highlight? I have a note here about a pregnancy advocacy service.
Yeah, so I won't say too much. So that, you know, there are some things that are very much in the developmental sort of stage, and there are things, you know, these are things that I've been working on for the last sort of 2+ years in terms of developing an idea myself and looking into what is offered and what's available. And I have high hopes for it, that it can make a difference. I have so many conversations with people who hope to be parents, whether that's hoping to experience a pregnancy, or you know, I had an amazing chat with Tom about, as a guy, thinking about becoming a dad, you know, one day with diabetes. And I've had lots of other chats like that as well. And I just sort of see that there's a need, and but also, you know, the experiences of other people, and seeing some kind of inconsistencies depending on where you live. Yeah, I just, there's so many, I guess, voices that need to be heard, and they're not really... Yeah, they're not, they haven't got the appropriate platform to do that. So I want to kind of create that for people, you know, people who hope to be parents, people who are experiencing pregnancy, and people who have experienced pregnancy and are now experiencing parenthood. I certainly think there needs to be some more advocacy around that, you know, the lived experience, rather than the, this is what your blood glucose will do in this trimester, and this is how you should deliver your baby. And do you know what I mean? It's the real, you know, on the ground lived experience that we need to be talking about a bit more, and yeah, the feelings around that.
Well, it seems that a lot of those recommendations should actually come from lived experience, that we should be analyzing what that lived experience is, finding a way to quantify it, and then make recommendations, and they may vary based on goals.
Absolutely. And interestingly enough, I've just joined a steering group for about 4 different research studies, looking at lived experience of pregnancy and labor. So that is happening, you know, that is actually happening in a sort of more official capacity, which is really, really interesting to look at. And but yeah, I think a lot of the public conversations focus, you know, they focus very much on even some of the stereotypes around having a baby when you have diabetes. I mean, I kept getting, you know, asked, oh, you're having a big baby then because you're diabetic. I'm like, no, I'm not having a big baby. And both of mine were 7 pounds, 8 ounces. So I'm really impressed with that. But it needs, yeah, just those kind of the conversations of, oh my God, I've been breastfeeding for 6 hours solid because this child is thirsty and growing, and what do I do with my diabetes? And it's making me feel like this. And it's those conversations that, yeah, the lived experience needs to be kind of out there. And there are some really lovely sort of pockets of groups, I call them, on here on Twitter and also Instagram, where, you know, there's a group of mamas, and we kind of do have those conversations a little bit, and it's great. And I think a lot of that is starting to influence some of the more official conversations in the background, I guess.
All right. One last question from me. I realize that we're running over the scheduled time a little bit.
Sorry, I'm a waffler. Tom should have warned you all.
That's okay. Are you okay with going a little bit longer?
Yeah. The kids are sparko, so I'm
okay.
I'm here for the duration.
All right, last question from me, although I think there's another section coming up with some more, but for right now, is just about sort of the logistics of how you manage diabetes in your everyday working life, with managing hypos, giving yourself insulin. Do you currently have any sort of impacts from diabetes as you do your job day to day currently?
So I'm really lucky because I'm freelance. I work from home and I work kind of around the kids and things. So unless I'm at a speaking event and I go hypo, it doesn't have much of an impact. I think also because of the industry I work in, everyone understands, you know, that if I'm hypo or hyper, that's going to impact my ability. So that's a really nice contrast to what I've experienced before with, we'll have some Haribo and get on with it. So it's, yeah, not big impacts. And I think I've just become more confident in saying, yeah, I can't carry on right now because my BGs are low or my BGs are high. Can we reschedule this? You know, to have someone on that I work with as well, also have type 1 and work in the industry. So, yeah, they absolutely get it and are like, oh, yeah, no problem. So that's quite a privileged position to be in, I know.
Well, that's definitely an advantage of working in the diabetes space, is that you're with people who get it.
Yeah. And it makes such a big difference to how I feel about my diabetes as well, because I think we often, you know, I spent a long time thinking about what it had taken away from me in terms of the things I could do in my life. So to be in an environment where people get it and it's embraced and they care as much about my diabetes as I do, I feel a bit more tender towards it, I guess, and a bit more, you know, nurturing. And yeah, that's quite a nice place to be.
All right. Well, thank you for that. That concludes our little section on your career, at least that part of it. And with that, I will throw things over to Morgan for the next section of questions.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
Hi, Nikki.
Hi, Morgan. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm loving everything that's going on. It's been great so far. Thank you again for coming on and chatting with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, excuse me, logged in. So my section is mainly focusing on, like, your relationship and pregnancy and parenting and all that jazz.
Yeah, the good stuff.
Yeah, so we mentioned earlier that we would talk a little bit about Matt, who is your now husband. So, kind of, how does he support you through, like, your diabetes and the double diagnosis and also parenting and all that? And kind of how you met and all that, you know, just a little bit of history.
Yeah, so I met Matt. I've had diabetes about 15 years by the time I met Matt, so it's very much mine. And I hadn't really shared it with anyone else. And then along comes Matt, who I met through, I did my first ever diabetes education course, and I made a friend there. And I think her and her partner decided that Matt and I would be a good match. But knowing that I wouldn't ever want to be set up, like openly set up, they just engineered it for us to be in the same place at the same time and see what happens. And what are we now, 5, nearly 6 years later? I think it's going okay. And 4 weeks after we met, I got the call that I could move to an insulin pump, and I was with a team in London at the time, and he got up at 6 a.m. And this is a guy that loves his sleep. He works nights, so he is like the most sleep deprived person I think I've ever met, but he'll sleep as much as he possibly can when he can. And he got up at, like, I think it was 5:30 in the morning so that we could drive up to London to get to the appointment at the hospital. And he sat in the hospital room with me all day learning about the pump. And, I mean, he had more questions than I did. Just absolutely brilliant. And I've never quite had that level of support and interest before. I think even my own family were very much like, yeah, you got this, just, you know, crack on with it, you'll let us know if you need anything, I suppose. But he has just been incredible. I'm the worst person for ignoring a hypo, and just kind of cracking on with whatever I'm doing, so I can't sit still. And he will make me sit still.
Oh, that's so nice and so interesting, like how he had more questions about the pump and all that.
Yeah, he's epic.
Yeah, I get, maybe, I don't know, I think I've had that too, like with people like that, I guess, aren't directly like using a pump or whatever, they're, I guess, more like have more questions because they're thinking more about it, not just, oh my gosh, I get this pump now, oh my gosh, I get to start it.
I think for us it's a very different, like, pump start day is a very exciting bit of progression, isn't it? And we're just so, like, into that, it's like, oh no, I want to get going on it.
Like, just give it to me, I've waited so long, just let's get started.
Exactly, you get quite sort of oh, what's the word? You get quite blinkered about it. You've got one destination in your sights. It's in the crosshairs, and nothing is going to distract from that.
Yeah, part of me wish I had someone with me in my T-Slim training, because now I have more questions than I did during the training and things I didn't ask. And because I was just so, I was ready for, I had been waiting for like over a year. I was like, no, I have no questions. I just want to get this thing on and let's get going. Like, I'm good. But so I guess after that you decided to like have kids and start a family and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
So like before making that decision and like going through with it, did you have any like worries, anxieties, like things like risks that might come up because of your diabetes?
So I think a lot of the concerns I had were born of all the stereotypes that you hear about women with diabetes having babies. You know, you're going to have a giant baby, you'll have to have a C-section, you hear about shoulder dystocia and things, and it's all the complications that could occur to the baby. but to be honest with you, I didn't hone in on those too much because I think initially I was just more consumed with whether I would be able to have babies. So I've had, albeit they said at the time it was quite a mild case of endometriosis, but it had a very big impact. And so I'd had that ablated and dealt with, and as mild as it was, once it was dealt with, it made a big impact, a positive impact. But I still didn't know if I'd be able to have children. I didn't know if the 15 years in the diabetes wilderness had caused any issues or anything like that. But I'd always said to consultants, I want to have children. So they always knew that was something that I wanted in my future. And I mean, for Matt and I, when we talked about it, my diabetes, I think this is the blessing of having a supportive team, who, you know, I knew how the antenatal process worked at Oxford and everything. I knew that I'd probably see my own consultant in clinic, in the antenatal clinic, and another consultant who I'd been fortunate enough to do some research stuff with. So I was kind of, I didn't have any worries, I guess. I try not to focus on complications generally, but I was aware that, you know, for some people, pregnancy can accelerate complications, but that's not across the board. I didn't really think too much about it. I was just genuinely like, can I even get pregnant? And what happens if I can't? Because this is something that I've wanted since I can remember. It's been a consistent dream for me, and so I didn't really think too much about the process, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you're just like determined, like this is what I want. During the pregnancy, how did you like find managing diabetes, like, and what was the difference, because you have two kids, correct?
So yeah,
what did you notice any differences between the two pregnancies?
So I've got a little girl and a little boy, so there are some old wives tales that are definitely true in terms of determining gender. We were talking about it actually yesterday, with Tabitha. I can only eat beige food, and that obviously then has an impact on your blood glucose, because you can only eat a certain type of food, or you're experiencing, I had hypremesis gravidarum with both kids, but it's interesting the impact that just the sort of the symptoms of pregnancy can have on your diabetes management, really. But I think for me, Tabitha was, my first pregnancy was definitely a lot more unknown, obviously. You know, by the time when I was pregnant with Felix, I had a little bit more of an idea what to expect, but also the technology I was using was different. So with Tabitha, it felt at times like harder work, but it also didn't feel like hard work because I was already a micromanager of my diabetes. So I just think I was just so grateful to be pregnant and to be having this child, that at that point I was just like, I will do anything that I need to do to make sure she and I are healthy. And we get to meet each other at the end of this, and we get to have lots of happy years ahead of us. So I guess it just didn't feel like an imposition. there were days in the moment where I'd be like, I hate diabetes, I'm fed up of this. But yeah, I was just genuinely so grateful and so relieved that I could have a baby. I didn't think for a minute that anything was too much like hard work. And it kind of prepares you for when you've got kids anyway, because they are at the forefront of everything once they're in your world. And it's all preparation for that. The pregnancy at times these days feels like it was the easy bit.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine they're very young, so having them running around all the time, all that.
Oh, yeah. They're willful, and they know their own minds, and they're just incredible little humans, and I love them, obviously. I'm biased. But, yeah, they're definitely the boss of me.
Do you have any tips or advice for people who have type 1 who may be wanting to try to have kids, become pregnant, on like managing or just, you know, getting through the pregnancy itself?
So, I mean, for me, the first thing is be really open with your team that is something that you are considering or that you would like in your future. And remember, when you're having that conversation with your team, you're not asking their permission, because it's not up to them whether you have a baby or not. Their role in that is to support you, to give you the tools to manage that and keep you well and healthy throughout. It's not up to them to give you permission. And I unfortunately hear from a lot of people who feel that they do have to ask permission from their consultant, and it makes me feel really sad. My pregnancies were surprises, but they were anticipated. They weren't planned, if that makes sense. So I'd anticipated that we were going to have babies, so I was taking folic acid, 5 milligrams. And I was, you know, I wasn't rigidly managing my, you know, checking my BGs or trying to stick to the HbA1c of someone without diabetes, because we weren't at the point where we were actively working more on or whatever. But yeah, they were anticipated, and they just that I was prepared for it. And my HbA1c wasn't horrific. It wasn't perfect. And I was very lucky that my team were like, no, it's fine. Don't worry. We'll support you to manage whatever you need to manage when that time comes. And they did. Tips on getting through the pregnancy. I have so many. I mean, connecting with other mums who have had babies and diabetes was amazing. There were a lot of people that I already spoke to on Twitter anyway, but to connect with them over something as big as a pregnancy and to have their support and their encouragement and just to see, you know, their little ones and that everyone's okay and things was really reassuring, especially on those days where it did feel a bit relentless. And that was normally around the time when you'd move into another trimester and the way your blood glucose reacted changed. You know, you'd be more resistant or less resistant. But I found comfort in knowing that was because of the pregnancy. So it took a bit of the detective work away. So also felt like there was a bit of a break. And then I would like everyone to feel empowered, I think, to discuss their choices and how they feel about their appointments, you know, how they manage the antenatal appointments, how they want to manage their labor, and what they might need after they've had their baby. You know, there's not a great deal of resources available around sort of like breastfeeding and type 1 and things. So just, you know, if you need a bit of extra support and knowledge about that, I'd like people to feel empowered to ask for that, because the more people that ask for it, then hopefully the more opportunity there will be for, you know, a more official kind of support to be there. Wine is good. Tea is good. it's the support and stashing Haribo all over the place. I cannot speak highly enough about just stashing Haribo in the most random places all over your house and garden, because there will inevitably be a moment as a parent where you are hypo and you're petrified that you can't look after your kids very well, and that you're not able to keep them safe, and you've got to go in the house or you've got to go upstairs or something to get a hypo treatment. I cannot say enough for being able to lift up a cushion on the garden sofa and grab a bag of Haribo in that moment. It's a lifesaver.
I'm going to contact a YouTuber who makes things, and I'm going to get him to make a laser-guided Haribo dispenser, right? You stick one in your garden, and you stick one in, your house, and it fires a laser around, and it tracks where your mouth is, and if you're hypo, all you have to do is say, I'm hypo, and it'll fire one straight at you.
Yeah, trouble with me is my kid can jump, so they just...
Yeah.
That's the biggest challenge as well with hypos as a parent is not sharing.
No, but you've got to kind of hide your sweets, haven't you?
I was going to ask, do you have like problems with your kids trying to like eat your hypo snacks? Like not just like when you need them, but just like in general?
In general, no, because I kind of keep them separate to everything else for the most part. But when I'm hypo, which is the worst time to be trying to steal my food, can I have one, Mama? Just one. Please, just one, Mama? Tabitha understands now that, no. If she wants to share, she'll let me have one. And sometimes I do. I will just give her one because I don't need the whole bag, for example, and it makes me feel kind. But Felix is like, me, mine, me one. I'm like, how do I ignore this child? How do I get away with not giving him a Haribo? And so I end up having to give him one sometimes.
I see his perspective. I love a Haribo too. I'd ask for one.
Yeah, I guess that, you know, at least they have a way of asking for them / demanding them.
demanding nicely. There you go.
Yeah, so Felix does resemble a bit of a demon when he's like, sweet. Sneaky! Me!
Aww.
It's cute.
That's so funny, though, like, trying to, like, because how old is he?
So Felix is 2 on Friday.
Oh, well, happy early
birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you. his language is starting to get his words now and start putting them together. And his sister, they both take after me. They put the hind legs off donkeys, I think. But she's great with her speech and her language. And he's got a good influence there, I think.
So I do have one final question. So how has the way that you managed your diabetes and, I guess, other than the obvious, like, life change since you became a mom and... like, how do you go through with your diabetes in everyday life?
I mean, day to day, I would say it's less of a priority. Because the kids come first, and that's sort of a big change. I give it a little less headspace now, which is both necessary and difficult, because obviously it's something that does need, it's the third child, really. It's the more petulant of them, and it does need mothering. But it's also that sort of slightly abandoned middle child, I guess, that I don't give it as much attention. It's much more reactive on a day-to-day basis. But I do find on days where Tabitha's at preschool and it's just Felix and I do give it a bit more attention. I will, that's when I'll sit and I might look at my clarity reports and think, what do I need to change there? I feel I've become more prone to burnout since becoming a parent. And that's because on difficult days with diabetes, when that's constant hypos or hypers, I feel that impact more because I see how it impacts my kids, and I hate that. I hate that they kind of carry the weight of that in their day-to-day lives. And actually it's something I talked about with Tom when we had our Zoom, that I've had people sort of say, well, it's not fair that your kids know that you're hypo, or that they see you prick your finger or give you an injection. And it took me a while to kind of think, but actually they don't know any different, and it's not me putting that on them. I'm not asking them to register that I'm hypo and deal with it for me. I'm not, it's part of their lives. It's just something that they're growing up around. And, you know, hopefully that will make them more empathetic as they get older to other people. And they will advocate for all of us people with diabetes. And maybe there'll be other people in their lives with diabetes that they'll be more mindful of. And I think that's where my mind kind of goes a lot of the time, is the impact on them.
Nikki, I can actually vouch for that. My little sister was 3 when I was diagnosed with diabetes. And she's now, just leaving school pretty much. And she actually saved a friend's life who was diabetic and hypo, but doesn't have any kind of CGM or anything like that.
Right.
Because she recognised the symptoms from seeing me with symptoms.
Yeah. Isn't that, it's hard, because you wish that we were, 10 years down the line and the cure's here and no one has to know about diabetes. But equally, you just feel so grateful, don't you, that because they see how we live with it in our lives, they are helping other people. That's incredible. So your little sister is just, what a great kid. She sounds brilliant.
She's awesome. She doesn't carry any kind of dextro tablets or anything with her or anything like that. But she actually said to me, she interrupted a teacher who apparently got a little bit frustrated with her for doing it. But, end result was good. So
that's amazing.
It was basically sort of slurring his words, talking in the background as kids do. Yeah. And basically she pointed out that something was wrong and said it kind of sounds like he's low sugar. Wow. She's recognised it from me.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Super proud of her.
yeah, and I hope, and that's all we can hope, isn't it, when our kids sort of see this. And I think that's why there's a time when I feel a responsibility for them to see me looking after my diabetes as well, because I think you don't want it to always seem scary or heavy. and you want them to see that it is manageable, but yeah, it's a balancing act.
Always.
Always.
Nikki.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for coming on this evening. You've covered so much. It's been absolutely fascinating. I just wanted to ask one final question. During your pregnancy, women, or some women, have pregnancy cravings. Did you have any particular pregnancy cravings that would typically increase your blood levels? Was there anything that you really like, I need that? And then you'd be bolusing more frequent because you wanted to have that. Or did you kind of say, nope, I can't, I won't have that, if you get me?
Yeah, I do get you. So, with Tabitha, there was just the first sort of 3 months were horrendous. And neither of my kids would let me drink tea. I went off tea in my pregnancies. It was the hardest time. With Tabitha in particular, and if anyone sees them in a shop, please buy them, DM me, I will send you the money for the postage and the product. Branston Pickle Mini Cheddars. I could only find them at train stations, but I could not get enough of those. Yeah, Branston Pickle Mini Cheddars. Honestly, so good. And I was happy to follow for those.
It sounds absolutely disgusting.
honestly, that's, yeah, so nice.
Each to their own. I respect that.
But yeah, that's the one sort of like craving that I can remember. I think it also with Tabitha and Felix, actually, it just got to a point where I was just so grateful to be able to eat anything that wasn't really beige. Hula hoops and apples were the only things I could eat for the first 3 months, really. I just got to a point where I was grateful to be able to have a varied diet. I think I was like, yeah, I'll bollocks for that. I don't care. I'll bollocks, it's fine.
Indeed.
Ice lollies. Remembering ice lollies were big.
It's coming back.
Yeah, ice lollies. Every night I'd have to have an ice lolly, even in the winter.
Cheers, Nikki. Thank you for coming on tonight. You're a superstar.
No worries. Thanks, Tom.
Lovely speaking to you, Nikki.
Yes, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for coming on.
No, honestly, thank you for having me. And the work you guys put into this is brilliant, honestly.